Tuesday, football is back. Everybody, this is Run It Up from the White Claw Studios here at Fan Run Radio. White Claw Hard Seltzer, crafted using water, 5% alcohol, and a hint of fruit flavor, only 100 calories, now available in 8 refreshing flavors, including fresh watermelon, sweet tangerine, and juicy lemon. Each one a wave of pure refreshment. White Claw Hard Seltzer, made pure. Please drink responsibly. And with that, we are in the wake of a Titans victory. 1-0.
Tighten up Tuesday.
1-0 is better than 0-1. The math suggests that. If you're a Titans fan, I think your heart suggests that.
You know what they say about the first week of the season. Half the teams are winless and half the teams are undefeated.
Are you going to...
And the Titans are undefeated, in case you didn't know.
I am aware of that fact.
As we stayed up till 1:30 a.m. this morning to see.
You can blame the West Coast.
Which is ridiculous, by the way. That's it. That's all I got to say.
I've got a little bit more to say. So, last night, Ryan Tannehill was 6 of 11 on throws that traveled more than 20 yards. That is crucial for this offense because teams are going to pack boxes trying to get the ball out of Derrick Henry's hands. The Titans are going to have to throw downfield. He finished 29 of an astonishing 43. That is a lot of passes for this team. For 249 yards and 2 touchdowns. This vertical and play-action passing game, again, will be crucial in validating Tannehill's extension this offseason as teams pack the box like Andy Reid, trying to fit all of his Tommy Bahama into one suitcase ahead of a trip to Bora Bora. The Titans will need Tannehill to do exactly what he did last night. Push the ball down the field and not make mistakes. We've talked a lot on this program about the loss of Jack Conklin, also without their first-round rookie Isaiah Wilson. No problem. They'll just run left instead of right. Mike Vrabel said we're just going to get behind our other Pro Bowl tackle and pound it behind Taylor Lewan as Tennessee busted with the boys and ran wide left 14 times, gaining 51 yards in the process. King Henry carried 31 times and racked up 116 yards against a defense that was tackling about as well as I've ever seen from a team perspective. Guys were rallying to the football, making it very difficult. They were attacking the line of scrimmage and making sure Derrick Henry did not beat them. Corey Davis, who after being a top five pick a couple years ago and not having his rookie option picked up this offseason, played with a different kind of charge to him last night. Even though he was a little dinged up coming in, Davis grabbed 7 of 8 targets, did so creating less than 2.27 yards of separation per play. For context, the league average is 2.84. That translation, he made tough catches all night long, including a remarkable toe drag that literally made me stand up en route to 101 yards. The defense was great. Jadeveon Clowney asserted himself and did Jadeveon Clowney things, although they don't always show up in the box score. Kevin Byard flew around and made plays. He forced a fumble, had a couple PBUs, should have maybe had a pick at the end of the game. And Big Jeff Simmons was awesome. The second-year DT ate all night long and more than adequately filled in the shoes of the departed Jarrell Casey. He had 2 big tackles on a goal line stand where the Titans forced a turnover on downs, recovered a fumble, said some words to Jerry Jeudy, and all around had a good time. All of this is well and good. The Titans won a tough road game in which they missed 4 kicks. That's something that's pretty hard to do. They got over 300 yards of total offense. And like I said, the most important thing is they won the football game. I don't think it's good enough. This is the same team that reached the AFC title last year, which is better than the team that I thought they were going to be, but not good enough to push through this glass ceiling that's in front of them and get to the big one. That is, after all, the point. They may get double-digit wins. They may even get a playoff win. But this team does not have the firepower to compete with the truly special offenses in the league. This whole ball control thing is cool, but I simply don't believe that you can beat the Chiefs with 16 points. Or even 27, which is what they should have had. This was virtually the best we can expect out of this offense, aside from maybe finishing a couple drives off. And it's not enough. It just isn't. That's my thought on the matter. We will discuss a little bit more with a couple Titans fans that I have in the room. Will Sled, Justin Scarlett. They'll tell me why I'm wrong. I'll tell them why I'm right. That's all up on the other side of the break. This is Run It Up, Tuesday afternoon, I guess it's evening now, WKGM Fox Sports Knoxville Fan Run Radio. Later on in the program, we will talk to Henry Schleiser about his week one impressions in the NFL. Big news out of the Big Ten, as it is expected that they will announce here, if they haven't already, that they intend to play a truncated schedule, potentially starting in November. That's stupid. We'll tell you why later. Also, Carson Breber on everything NBA, as game one of the Eastern Conference Finals underway, Celtics and Heat. Game 7, Nuggets-Clippers, also tonight. So we'll get his thoughts on that. But we'll start back with the Tennessee Titans. Played last night, really late in Denver, up late in Mile High. They got the win. Justin Scarlett said some pretty inflammatory things to me in response to said win. He says the Titans quarterback is top 5 in the AFC, and I do not agree.
I don't think it's inflammatory by any means.
No, it's pretty hot. That's a hot one.
It's warm. Pretty fresh off the stove takes. So here's what got me thinking about it, right? I texted you this last night.
Mm-hmm.
John Reed's tweet of Ryan Tannehill, a top 3 AFC quarterback, doing top 3 AFC quarterback things. So I start thinking, you're like, that's just kind of a, one of those things you throw out there. It's not really, no credence to that. But I started thinking, I'm like, maybe not top 3, but top 5. I mean, let's look at who are the quarterbacks in the AFC, right? So I go find this Washington Post article from post-draft in April 28th by Des Beeler. I'll give him a shout-out. No free shout-outs. And, obviously at the top of the AFC, you have your man, Patrick Mahomes, $500 million man.
And best quarterback ever.
Okay. Speaking of hot takes, fresh off the press. And then you have your 2019 MVP, Lamar Jackson. Both of those are pretty solidified. Probably the two best quarterbacks in the league overall in the AFC. But after that, you get into a whole lot of good to average quarterbacking in the AFC for guys at this point in their career, right?
Sure.
So you start looking, maybe Ryan Tannehill, maybe not a top 3. Maybe he's not the third guy. But maybe a top 5 guy in the AFC if we look at it. 22-6 last season, 2 touchdowns last night, pretty good performance as we talked about.
Mm-hmm.
Like to see the Titans finish some drives a little bit better, a little bit more efficiency in the run game, but Tannehill did about everything you expect him to, right?
Yeah, which is what he does, about everything you expect him to.
Yeah.
Just not really anything more than that ever.
Yeah, but that might be good enough for top 5 in the AFC quarterbacks.
I mean, I started thinking about it, right? Saying top 3 in the AFC, okay, you're stretching. You're reaching.
Extendo.
Extendo, if you will. Bo Jackson running up the wall, reaching an arm out. That's an extension. The NFC has most of the good quarterbacks in the NFL. Also a fact. Top 3, that's difficult. Top 5? I mean, there's only 16 starting quarterbacks in the AFC. He only has to be better than 11 guys.
Yeah. And he's a $100 million man. Surely he's better than 11 guys.
I don't know if that correlates.
Anyway.
He threw for less than 100 yards in 2 playoff games. They won those playoff games.
Just win, baby.
Tighten up.
Anyway, let's go through the list here.
Let's do it.
So, right, this article made post-draft. Number 3, Houston Texans with Deshaun Watson, right? Just to kind of give a look at, some AFC quarterbacks. Which I think is fair.
Absolutely fair. The third.
I think Deshaun Watson is definitely top 5 in the AFC, somewhere slating in after those first two.
Yeah, that top 3 is solidified. That's probably 3 of the top 5 or so quarterbacks in the league.
Yeah, yeah. And then at number 4, they have the Cincinnati Bengals and Joe Burrow.
That's ridiculous.
And give me Ryan Tannehill any day of the week over Joe Burrow or any quarterback in the Cincinnati Bengals quarterback room.
So my response to that would be that Joe Burrow's ceiling, based on what we know, they should have won that game. That was a ridiculous. There were 2 OPIs called at the end of games yesterday. That was 2 days ago. Sunday. That were ridiculous. The one with Dallas, where the receiver clearly pushed off, but it was not enough for me to elicit a flag. And the one where A.J. Green caught the touchdown to win the game. They said he pushed off. Then they kicked the field goal, and Bullock faked an injury because he shanked it. He may not have actually faked an injury, but it certainly looked that way. I don't know where I'm going with this.
But we're not talking about ceilings. We're talking about the player right now. Who are the top? Is Ryan Tannehill a top five AFC quarterback? My answer is yes. Because after the top three, who else do you have? Going through this list, number four, number five are Joe Burrow and Baker Mayfield. Right now, I would rather have Ryan Tannehill than any of them. Then number six is Ryan Fitzpatrick. No.
Yeah, three picks.
I think maybe your fourth one at this point, looking at how he played, obviously only 1 week in the system, would be Cam Newton. It's probably your fourth best quarterback in the AFC, in my opinion. I think he's better than Big Ben or Phillip Rivers, who are probably somewhere right after the number five ranking sometimes.
So I'm going to just go through some of these quarterbacks, and I'm going to throw them out to you, lob them up, and you defend your case against the guys that I throw out, okay?
Okay.
So the first one that comes to mind is Josh Allen. You think he's better than Josh Allen?
That was going to be my next facet of this argument, right, is that probably your number five and your number six after Cam, Deshaun, Mahomes, and Jackson, you're looking at right now in the AFC, Josh Allen and Ryan Tannehill. And for my money in the Titans system right now, for this year specifically, I would rather have Ryan Tannehill. He runs that system way better than Josh Allen could run that system, which for me would factor into that and makes him the better quarterback, as I said, right now. Now, 3 years down the road, who am I going to want? Probably not Ryan Tannehill in that argument. But right now, I think that would slate in Ryan Tannehill as the fifth best quarterback in the AFC.
Again, I say with Ryan Tannehill, this may be an argument that you win based on the fact that Ryan Tannehill is what he is. He's never going to be more than that. I think personally, to win at the highest level of NFL football, you either have to have a special defense and the complementary pieces on the offensive side around an average quarterback to win. And when I say special, I don't necessarily even mean best in the league. We have to have one of the best defenses in the decade, realistically. That's what the history indicates. When we talk about the Trent Dilfer teams, Peyton Manning his last year with the Broncos, it has to be a different kind of defense.
Seattle Seahawks, yeah.
Yeah. And even then, Russell Wilson is Russell Wilson. Maybe if he wasn't there yet. Ryan Tannehill is not complimented by a defense like that. It's a good defense. It might even be a top five defense. Not a special defense. Okay. So he is not a guy who's ever going to go above and beyond. But so far in Tennessee, he's not disappointed. He's not done anything they really have been hurt by. So, I mean, you're looking at a guy who is starkly average to above average. That's fair?
He is a good quarterback. That's it.
He's a good quarterback.
Not very good. Not great. I wouldn't even say above average. Right now in his career with this Titans system, he is a good quarterback.
And he does everything they need him to with really good complementary pieces.
Correct.
Humphreys is great for this system, working the underneath stuff. A.J. Brown is that kind of guy who's a different kind of build, athletically.
Built different.
Built different, if you will. And he can present some issues run after the catch. He can make things where there aren't plays necessarily to be made by the average player. That's what he brings. Corey Davis, this long striding receiver that can make tough catches over the middle of the field when he's on.
If Corey Davis plays like he did last night for the rest of the season, even like 80% of what he was last night, that makes me so much more excited for this Titans team and any possibility of where they could go. Having an actual number two receiver, like two really, really good outside threat receivers in A.J. Brown and Corey Davis,
yeah,
is something they have not had in a long, long, long time.
So as a quarterback, I think he might be set up almost better than anybody in the league because he's going to be in a situation where every game they play, he is not going to be the number one priority to stop, which is not the case really with any offense in the league, that the running back is the primary focal point that the defense is saying, we got to take that away. He's going to be throwing against secondaries that are playing a lot of man coverage. He's going to be playing against guys that are on an island because the safeties are up in the box trying to stop Derrick Henry with two pretty good receivers, three pretty good receivers, and a tight end in Jonnu Smith, which is a matchup eater. So he should be putting up numbers. He should be good. He's in an ideal situation. They just need him to be able to create the plays where he has to go above the scheme, get out of the pocket, do something special for them to be a real Super Bowl contender, which was the argument in that monologue at the beginning of the show. I don't know if he is that. guy like Gardner Minshew. Minshew Mania, I don't know. He seems to be able to make some of the plays that you don't expect him to make. So what about Gardner?
You're asking me if I want Ryan Tannehill or Gardner right now?
I think Gardner Minshew had more touchdowns.
I'd rather have Josh Allen than Gardner Minshew. Not that I don't. I love Gardner Minshew. He is very cool. He's like everything Baker kind of was coming out, but not nearly as hyped up.
Yeah.
And way more under the radar. But he still has like the kind of like white trash swag a little bit, for lack of a better word. You know, mustache, jorts, headband, very Uncle Rico.
His nickname is King Jockstrap. That, when you look him up in Football Reference, his nickname is literally King Jockstrap.
So he's like a poor man's Baker Mayfield, but he's actually playing better than Baker Mayfield is right now, I would say. So, like, he's really cool. I hope he has success. I don't think he's better than Ryan Tannehill or Josh Allen.
Did you know he now holds the record for the top two highest completion percentage games in Jaguars history?
Jaguars history.
And it's a short history, and it's not a very good history. But still.
Congrats. He beat out Blaine Gabbert and David Garrard and Blake Bortles.
Yes. Yes. He might be the best player in Jaguars history when this is all said and done.
God, I hope so.
Another fun stat, just this is off the cuff here a little bit. Not really relevant to this conversation. Did you know Matt Ryan's a top 10 passer all time now?
Yeah, Matty Ice.
That's just remarkable to me, considering he doesn't necessarily... He is an all-time great quarterback.
Yeah, he's kind of like... Not like Drew Brees, because Drew Brees, you know, has Super Bowls and, you know, has actually done things in the postseason.
I mean, Matt Ryan's an MVP and should have won a Super Bowl.
Well, 28-3. But anyway, Bill Belichick, you know how it goes. But, like, he has that very much kind of Drew Brees quality about him, where, like, he's just kind of been almost more of a new age Philip Rivers, I think, is a better comparison,
mm-hmm.
where he's just really good for a long time with the same team. He's never really been hurt or had to miss a lot of time. So he's just been really good for a really long time, so he has accumulated the stats. Like, yeah, I mean, are you going to ask me if Matt Ryan's a top 10 quarterback ever? No, I don't think so necessarily, but the statistics say he definitely is.
Well, the remarkable thing about that is that in the top 10, we are all of the college age range. We have all pretty much seen everybody play that's in the top 10 in passing now. The only guys that are in it that aren't from this era are John Elway, who is 10th, and Dan Marino, who is 5th. The rest of the list goes Breeze at the top, then Brady, Manning, Favre, Marino, Philip Rivers, Eli Manning, Ben Roethlisberger, Matt Ryan, John Elway. So I do wonder how many guys, Aaron Rodgers isn't too far behind, he's at 13th right now, has a chance to hop Elway this season if he throws for 4,000 yards.
I didn't realize Eli Manning would be that high on that list. I had no clue he was in the top 10 passing yards.
He was good for a really long time.
Yeah.
And that's what it comes down to. Going back now, let's focus back in on the quarterback of the Tennessee Titans, who is not one of these all-time greats. I'm going to continue to throw names here as we filibuster on. Henry Slizer will be on the line here in a couple minutes. But let's compare him to Baker Mayfield, because Baker Mayfield clearly has more talent.
That's fair.
Than Ryan Tannehill. That's the reason he was a number one pick. Are you confidently saying, though, you'd rather have Ryan Tannehill?
Right now, at this moment, yes.
Okay, explain.
I mean, I don't know. I can't pinpoint, which I don't think anyone can pinpoint, exactly what Baker's issues have been since kind of the rookie campaign where he showed so much promise coming in relief of Josh McCown, I believe, was the starting quarterback initially that
year. Yeah, Tyrod Taylor, too, I think, was in there.
Yeah. And kind of giving them that hope that the Browns hadn't had in so long. And then you see them get OBJ, they get Jarvis Landry. But even after getting all those pieces, even last year, whenever you look at them having a guy like Duke Johnson, for some reason, part of it may be Freddie Kitchens' fault for whenever he was the head coach there, kind of getting thrust in that role before that,
right.
Before he was ready. Obviously, he's not there anymore. But for whatever reason, Baker has just never been able to kind of – even with the receivers, like we were talking about the other day, how the Browns have so much talent, but for whatever reason, they're just not good. They just can't seem to put it together.
Well, it was awful. They got blown out worse than any team in the league this past weekend.
Like, there's no reason the Browns should ever go into a game with those two receivers and that quarterback and score 6 points.
let alone Myles Garrett, who's one of the most physically imposing players in the league, and a lot of different pieces on defense, a defensive line that should be pretty decent. No, it is dumbfounding. It is dumbfounding, and you have to ask the question of, is this team actually cursed? Because this shouldn't happen.
So is it a Browns thing? Is it a Baker Mayfield thing? I don't know, but Baker has never looked that good since his rookie year, in my opinion.
It's fair. I think you might be right. I will die on this Tannehill with you. Top five quarterback in the AFC.
Rowdy Ryan.
Rowdy Ryan. Not top three. We're going to pump the brakes. We love you, John Reed. Friend of the program. Not top three.
What if he goes 2-0 against Deshaun Watson head-to-head?
Still
this
not
year?
Top three.
Oh, come on.
Not going to do it. Henry Schleiser is on the other side of a break. Let's pay some bills. Justin, take us to a break. Tuesday night, winding things down and closing up shop here at Fan Run Radio. This is Run It Up. Peyton Gallagher, Will Sled, cutting up the podcast and doing big favors for the guys. And Justin Scarlett is on the board. Henry Schleiser is on the phone, the host of the Waiver Wire podcast. And Henry, we've got football back in our lives. Would ask you how you are, but I'm pretty sure you're doing pretty well.
Peyton, I'm great. This weekend was a little stressful as a Bears fan, but all is good. It was a pretty good first weekend, I think. I mean, I'll say this, having football back just felt so good. It felt so amazing. The actual product, it was a little sloppy, but all things considered, very, very happy and I'm in a very good mood.
Yeah, we had some shocking results around the league. I'm not sure if that's just the great equalizer that is week one when teams don't have film on each other, don't necessarily know what to expect. I don't know if that can be attributed to them not having the same kind of run-up to the season without a preseason. So it's going to be interesting to track going forward. I do want to ask you, though, before we get into all the football from this weekend, earlier today, Allen Robinson deleted all of his media with Bears affiliation at all. And apparently now he's requested an official trade. This is coming after a win, so I think the timing's a little bit odd. What do you make of it?
So today there was a whirlwind of stuff coming out in Chicago. So some Chicago sports radio guys came out and said that A-Rob had requested a trade. But then Allen Robinson's agent came out and said they had not requested a trade. Mm-hmm. He's just unhappy with his current contract situation, which I understand. I mean, I think Allen Robinson should and deserves to be paid like one of the top wide receivers in the NFL because he is.
Mm-hmm.
I'm confident that the Bears will get a deal done with him. And I mean, I understand where he's coming from. I understand why he's frustrated. I understand why he is upset that he's about why he's not being paid like one of the best in the NFL. So I think it's very odd. I think the timing is, I'm not really surprised by the timing just because this is something that's been going on for a pretty long time now. But I think the biggest thing today is Allen Robinson's teammates have been very vocal about wanting him to get extended, and they want him sticking around, and he's huge to that Bears locker room. So if they let him go or traded him or whatever, that would be so detrimental to the Bears.
Oh,
I just don't see a way where they let him walk, and I'm very confident that both sides will get the deal done.
So I'm trying to work around their cap situation. Obviously, a lot of money is tied up in Khalil Mack in this defense. Look at it, and it's three of the top four guys on their payroll are defensive players, which is not necessarily common in the modern-day NFL. It's a team with a rookie-scale quarterback. That is helpful for their cap situation, but, you know, Mitch could have a big year. And based on what he did, he had some bad throws, he had some good throws. They won the football game. That's what's important. That could also factor into any decisions they make about Allen Robinson. So if you're the Bears, how long do you wait on this, trying to play both sides of the fence and hedge here because you may have to pay your quarterback in the near future?
Well, here's the deal. I think the thing with the Bears is the Mitch Trubisky potential contract situation is something that's looming. And I'll say this really quick. Mitch Trubisky on Sunday against Detroit, he played the most perfect game for both sides of the Mitch Trubisky argument of he played awful and looked awful, but then turned it on and they won the game and played great in the fourth quarter. So it was the perfect game for both sides of the Mitch Trubisky argument. But the thing with the contract extension, if he does have a breakout year, my big thing is, if you're the Bears, you got to make sure that you have your best players locked up. And that sounds very simple, and I'm probably not saying that in the best possible way, but Allen Robinson is a guy who is a star, and mm-hmm. you need him, not just on the field, but in the locker room. And he's got a huge presence in the city of Chicago. He needs to be in navy blue and orange. Like, the Bears need him more than Allen Robinson needs Chicago. So I think you got to get him extended as soon as you can, as fast as you can. And any problems that come in the future, deal with them then. But there is no way you can let Allen Robinson walk away.
It is going to be tough to navigate. They're going to have to make some hard cap decisions based on who do you think can be a part of the future based on who is producing for you now. Cody Whitehair's extension kicks in next year, which will take a big chunk out of the payroll, especially because that's backloaded. I don't know. It's going to be tough for them to maneuver because this is a guy who is already the second highest paid player on the team, but his deal's up after this year. If you're the Bears, I think it really depends on how close to contention you think you are, because he's a crucial fulcrum point for this offense, which only matters if you think you can win football games in 2020. If you think you aren't going to be able to re-sign him, at what point does this boil over and they just decide to cut losses, cut bait, and trade him?
That's a really good question. I mean, I would love to see Allen Robinson get... I would love to see him get extended as soon as possible, like I've said. But the thing is, as you mentioned, the trade, and if the Bears, let's say you've played 13 games, let's just say you're 7-6, and you're maybe going to sneak into the playoffs, right? You're not competing for a division or anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that's right up on the trade deadline. That's if an extension isn't done by then, that's where I think it would be most likely for the Bears to try to deal him. Because here's the thing. I think the Bears have a very, very good roster. It's just lacking in a few crucial places, but top down, their roster's very good. It's very deep.
One of the best in football.
Yeah, yes. And that's the weird thing. They have one of the best rosters in football.
Right.
They just lack in like two positions.
But they're the most important positions, and that's what defines this team.
Yes, exactly. So but that's where it gets so hard, because the Bears really, I don't think, are that far away, but at the same time they are, which is very frustrating, because it's going to be a very hairy situation when you get to the trade deadline, or if he's not traded then or not extended, the off season, and that you went 9-7 and just snuck into the playoffs and lost in the wild card round. It's like, it gets tricky. It gets very, very tricky. So I don't know. I really don't know how the Bears are going to manage this, but no matter what happens, either Allen Robinson gets extended or he walks, and that'll be extremely detrimental to the core, to the culture, and to the overall well-being of the Chicago Bears.
Just a last note on the situation developing between the Bears and Allen Robinson. The team only has $3 million available this year. So if they were to extend him, they don't really have the option like the Patriots would if they were to bring somebody in like an Allen Robinson with all this money freed up by COVID opt-outs to front-load a deal. So that's not really on the table. They only have $8 million available next year that's not already committed. And they have to find a way to potentially sign Mitch Trubisky. They could potentially unload Nick Foles' $4 million commitment somewhere else. But this is tough, especially considering they paid Robert Quinn this offseason. This is a team that, much like the Saints, is kind of paying off credit cards with credit cards based on their cap situation. It's not great, so there's not a lot of maneuverability for the squad when they're trying to get a deal done.
No, and you're right. It's extremely difficult and extremely frustrating just having to see what they're doing. We're just seeing what they're doing and how they've done it. And look, here's the thing. A few years ago in 2018, when you made that trade for Khalil Mack, I don't blame the Bears for doing it because they went all in. They went all in, and they tried, and they really went in and tried to win the Super Bowl that year and tried to compete for a Super Bowl. And that's what you're supposed to do, but then it's obviously everything's fine and dandy if you win it, but they didn't. So now you have to deal with the repercussions of that deal. And I'm not saying the Khalil Mack deal was a bad deal, because it wasn't.
He's no, you do that.
One of, if he, he's what he might, he's in the debate for the best defensive player in football. It's him and Aaron Donald. They're 1A and 1B. And it's a deal you had to do and had to make because it was an awesome, awesome trade. But it also makes things extremely hard, especially when you paid, you paid Cody Whitehair, which I don't think was a bad deal, but then you give contracts like
Eddie
the one
Jackson.
You gave to Jimmy I'm fine with the Eddie deal because I think Eddie is the best free safety in the NFL. But then you look at the other contracts, like, especially this offseason, to like Jimmy Graham. Mm-hmm. And I know Robert Quinn is a decent pass rusher, but they gave him a really, really big deal. I mean, it's just really hard to, it's really hard to look at and say, I don't, I'm sure there is a way, but I don't know what it is right now to where the Bears can come out and get away with this with minimal damage. Cause I think this is, they're in a dangerous situation right now.
Yeah. I guess this is why people are calling for Ryan Pace's head. This is what happens when you trade for a backup quarterback with a massive deal and then you want to make him your starter, but then you don't start him. And now you're in a whole conundrum. So, moving on, enough on the Bears. Let's talk about the rest of the league. What were your biggest takeaways from week one?
My biggest takeaways from week one is everybody just needs to chill out because it is prime overreaction season.
Oh, yeah.
And you know what, Peyton? I'll admit, I fall victim to overreaction season sometimes. But here's the thing. I had people talking to me saying that the Bucs are overrated and that Tom Brady's washed. Slow down.
Well,
it's
week one. I might be one of those people. We'll discuss.
But like, you got to look at everything. You got to look at all sorts of things. And people are talking about how Cam Newton and the Patriots are going to like look dangerous. And my big take on that is, relax. They played the Dolphins in week one. They played the Dolphins in a year with no preseason, with a month-long training camp with no OTAs.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is, you got to take it with a grain of salt. That's the thing. And there, I know it's easy to overreact, but I think everybody just needs to chill out, wait a few more weeks, and then the picture will be a little more clear.
And I do actually happen to totally agree with that point. Now, I was skeptical of the Bucs before the season, and that's why I'm kind of taking the stance now. But it is also important to note, Tom Brady in his career has started 0-1 three times. He has reached the Super Bowl. And every one of those seasons, we have pronounced Tom Brady dead multiple times throughout his career. That has not been the case. He's a guy that sometimes, especially in a new system where he has admitted he's not comfortable in the scheme, it's going to take a little bit longer. They didn't get a preseason. That's also important here. I'm just saying this year, if the first 4 weeks of the season serve as this team's preseason, and they then haven't figured it out by week five or six, they're out of time. If they go 2-4, they might be out of things. That's why I'm skeptical of the Bucs. So let's start there. What'd you think of that debut? Because it was very uneven for Tom Brady. There were some bad moments. People have focused on that. It's totally fine. We don't expect to see those things from Tom Brady. There was also some good. So what do you think?
I think it was a very week one performance. I mean, you could tell Tom Brady has only really been practicing with these guys for a little over a month. And look, the Bucs, I think people are reacting in a way that says the Bucs played a lot worse than they actually did.
Right.
People have to remember the Saints are a super good football team. The Saints are one of the best teams in the NFL. So the fact that the Buccaneers went into New Orleans, struggled a little bit, and still played not a great game, but a fairly average game with a month of practicing with each other, come on. I mean, it's not the biggest deal. It's week one. This offseason has been unlike anything we've ever had. And the Bucks went in and for the most part competed. They struggled. I get it. They struggled on defense. The offense had its kink. But you got to remember, Mike Evans was also hurt. He's got a hamstring injury that he's dealing with. If it's your first game playing together and you're opening up with a team that's won 26 games in the past 2 years, that's really, really tough.
Yeah. No, you make a good point. A lot of the things, I worried about the secondary. They played a little bit better than I thought they would. Worried about this offensive line a lot. They played a little bit better than I thought they would. It's just like, if you take away that first drive, though, where the Buccaneers come out and you go, okay, this is scary. They march right down the field. They balance the run and the pass very well. After that, the Saints kind of figured them out, and Brady had picks he doesn't customarily have. So does that concern you at all, that he wasn't necessarily as sharp as he normally is? Do you think that's an age thing, or do you think that has more to do with the fact that he's in a new, unfamiliar system and trying to get acquainted?
I think it's just he's in a new place. He's working with a new system. He's thrown to guys who he's only been thrown to for a few weeks. And look, I get it. It's easy to look at Tom Brady's performance and say, oh, that was awful. He's not going to succeed. He looked bad. He looked uncomfortable. Because all those things are true. If he didn't look great. He had his spurts, but he didn't look very good. Some of the other times that people have called for Tom Brady's head after they got blown out by the Kansas City Chiefs in 2014, after he got suspended in 2016, and in 2018, and the Patriots started 1-2, and they were calling for Tom Brady's head again because the Pats were hitting a roadblock early in the season. And what happened in all three of those seasons? The Patriots went on and won the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
You can never look at one bad Tom Brady game at the beginning of the year and just think, oh, he's washed, he's done, because that's absolutely not the case, because the Bucs could win 14 of their next 15 games and go 14-2 and be the one seed in the NFC.
Let me hop in here, because very quickly I do want to comment on something you just said. I think the difference is this time he's not a New England Patriot. The Patriots can't do anything now. It's Tom Brady in Tampa Bay, and he's 43 years old. Eventually, it has to slow down. And I don't know. This time feels a little bit different. I am reluctant to go out on the limb and count this guy out ever, right? But I will say I am the least confident I've ever been about Tom Brady rebounding at the start of a year than I am right now. It feels different to me.
Yeah, I mean, okay. And Peyton, you have every reason to think that. And you know what? If I wasn't so in on the Bucks, I might agree with you. But I can never, like you said, I can never bet against Tom Brady. I think right now, everyone's kind of looking at this Bucs team thinking, oh, maybe they aren't what we thought they were. And Tom Brady's number one thing is he just feeds on haters and motivation and all that. So looking at what he's done in the past and people have counted him out, I feel pretty good about his chances of bouncing back. Plus, Bruce Arians is one of the best in the business.
Yes.
I mean, he's an unbelievable coach, and he's one of the best in the NFL. So you look in, it might take a few weeks, but the Bucs have a tune-up game against the Jets next week, and they should be able to at least figure some stuff out a little bit. They have a few weeks where they can tune things up, and then I think they'll be just fine.
Yeah, and I'm with you. I'm not ready to just hop in and say this team is a disappointment after the first week. Let's get to week five, let's get to week six, and reevaluate. I'm just saying that's not the start that you necessarily want. I'm not saying that their season is over. So with that said, I do want to note on one other thing really quickly before we leave the Buccaneers. Very weird that Bruce Arians kind of threw Tom under the bus in post-game pressers. Pretty much said, well, we knew what they were going to do, and he looked good in practice, but he couldn't do it in the game. Thought that was kind of weird. Just going to leave that out there. Let's move on to a game that I wanted to talk about yesterday and didn't really find the time. But the Rams and the Cowboys, I think, was revealing of a lot of different things about a team that we were wondering whether or not they could return to the kind of team that they were 2 years ago in the Rams. And the Cowboys, with all these new toys, what they would look like. And we got some answers, but I'm not sure how much that had to do with Aaron Donald, how much that had to do with Mike McCarthy. What do you take away from that one?
It was a very interesting game. All I'll say about this is I thought one of these teams, depending on the outcome, I thought one of these teams could show the world that, like, hey, we're here and we're going to make some noise this year, and neither team did that. The Cowboys looked awful. The Rams didn't really look much better. Aaron Donald looked great. He looked like a beast.
So good.
But, I mean, the Cowboys, man, just did not look good. And I don't know what it is, but Dak just doesn't have it. All this talk about Dak being an MVP contender and being one of the best in the league, get out of here with that. Am I overreacting a little bit? Maybe. But Dak finished slow last year, and he started slow this year, and the Cowboys just don't look like a team that has it. And they lost Blake Jarwin for the year and Leighton Van Der Esch for 6 to 8 weeks.
Yeah.
So the Cowboys are in trouble. And that's all I can really say about that. They look like they're in trouble.
So a lot of people were complaining about how passive the offense looked with all these new weapons. People expected them to be throwing the football all around the yard. I'm in two minds about this. In one mind, I am a little bit concerned because this was a big criticism of Mike McCarthy at the end in Green Bay, was that the offense was too vanilla. And it looked that way against this Rams defense that has some really good individuals, but as a unit, probably shouldn't be in the top half of the league. The other one is, okay, they didn't push down the ball down the field because Aaron Donald was in the backfield in less than 3.5 seconds on average, and Dak really didn't have time. So in that regard, are you worried about how the Cowboys approach this game, or do you think it's kind of fluky because they're playing a defensive lineman with the kind of gravity that Aaron Donald has?
Honestly, I think it's a mix of both. I mean, Aaron Donald is one of the two best defensive players in the NFL, one of the five best players in the NFL as a whole. So I think that had to do something with it and their struggles to run the ball, because Aaron Donald is unstoppable. But then they also didn't. I really think the Cowboys' success goes through Ezekiel Elliott. He is their prized possession, just in general. He's the face of that team. They should be giving Zeke the ball 25 times a game, and I don't understand why they don't do it, because he is so good. He's one of the three best running backs in the NFL, and they just. I get it. You want to air it out, and you have good weapons, but none of that matters if you can't run the football.
Yeah.
And they have one of the best backs in the NFL. They should be able to do it no problem, but for whatever reason, they just don't, and they struggle.
Yeah, I think they're going to miss Travis Frederick a lot. They've got the rookie center from Wisconsin who did not start, Biazdas. I'm pretty sure that's not how you pronounce his name, but I tried. Connor Williams, some of these other pieces, but this is not the offensive line of old. Lyle Collins is out for the year. That's going to be a massive loss. I like getting Zeke involved in the screen game and getting creative with him, but ultimately you've just got too many weapons around Dak for this not to work this year. So if it doesn't, you can't pay him, and that's the bottom line. I wish we could get more into it. We're running out of time here a little bit. I do want to ask you this in closing. Was there a team that you saw this weekend that you thought could be the Chiefs? My producer,
no.
Justin Scarlett, and Mouse, the Titans.
No, there is not a team in the NFL that I think could beat the Chiefs, but I think the team that has the best chance is the Baltimore Ravens. And even then, the Ravens need the stars to align and for Lamar Jackson to have the game of his life to have a chance against beating the Kansas City Chiefs. There is not a team in the NFL, Peyton, that can run with the Chiefs, that can compete with how deep they are and how good they are. They are quite literally the kryptonite for the entire league.
I saw today that Peter Schrager on Good Morning Football said they were having a draft of the guys that they thought were most likely to lead the league in rushing. And Schrager said Clyde Edwards-Helaire with a third pick. And that's a respected football mind. Actually, the second pick, excuse me. If they've got that kind of running game to go along with the passing that they are capable of, and the defense that plays with nothing to lose because if they get burned, the offense will make up with it, and they're really good at that, yeah, this has the potential to be a 16-0 team. Do you believe that?
I don't know about 16-0, just because 16-0 was really, really tough.
Oh, yeah.
But do I think 14-2, 15-1 is very much in the picture? Absolutely. Here's my hot take for you, Peyton.
I love it.
This Chiefs team has the potential to not only be the highest scoring team in NFL history, but to be the greatest team in NFL history. This team, we could see a run where they get to the playoffs and they blow everybody out by 30-plus.
Yeah.
This team is so close. I mean, there's really no such thing as a perfect football team. This team is very, very close to it. They're the closest thing I've seen to – they're the closest thing I've seen to a perfect squad, and there is just no way in my mind that anybody can sniff them.
Henry, I'm right there with you. I said publicly that I think this team is going to score on more drives than they end up punting this year. I think this is going to be a really special offense. Hopefully COVID doesn't put a damper on that, alter anything. If they get through the season unscathed, I think I'm right there with you. Again, folks, this is Henry Schleiser. You can check him out on the Waiver Wire podcast, streaming on all platforms. Henry, thank you for coming on.
Peyton, thanks for having me. Always a pleasure, my friend.
Appreciate you. All right, we are going to get to hour number two on the other side of a break. We'll send it to it. WKGM, Fox Sports, Knoxville, Fan Run Radio.